Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Well, hello, you beautiful people. How are you guys?
Excellent. Justin Robert Young.
Oh, hi, friends. How are you?
Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Oh, that's me here working the dials.
Yeah, he's tweaking the knobs.
Yeah, I'm
tweaking the knobs. listen, today's April Fool's Day, and we like to think that year-round we are kind of just fools and stuff. So when you talk about weird stuff, there's nothing really weird that you can do that would really surprise people. So it's going to be a straightforward podcast. And that's not a setup for let's sneak in something weird.
It does sound very much like a setup for let's sneak in something weird. like you saying that made me think, oh, my God, is there a bit that we were supposed to be doing that I didn't know about?
Now I think we're all assuming, like, wait a minute, like, is everybody else in on it? And I'm the one that they're going to play the joke on? Like, yeah.
Oopsie. No. I got a story that, like, you hear the title, you're like, oh, it's funny, and then you get to the reality, and like, this is horrifying.
This is perfect for April Fool's Day. You're gonna think it's funny, and then you're gonna realize that it's dark.
Wait, is this like, this is another goblins thing, right? Where we had so much fun about goblins, and then we had the slow realization of what goblins actually meant.
Goblins was just a slur for other humans who were sneaking into people's bedrooms and molesting people.
Yeah.
So, this is not quite a goblin story, and all right. So, let's build, and I'm going to tell you right now, it's not snakes, okay? And it's not spiders. Okay. So let's say you built yourself a hospital somewhere. Okay. Let's say you built a hospital. And what's the worst thing that could happen?
An infection. I know. It could be located in a period of time before people understood germ theory, back when doctors didn't wash their hands between patients and all of your maternity ward was dying because doctors refused to believe that they should wash hands. And then you try to tell everyone about hand washing, and you even demonstrate by having people swallow pills from other people's infected material, and you factually demonstrate germ theory, but you're derided by all your peers for your so-called filth parties, and they mock you and laugh you, and it's decades of people dying before people figure out you're right.
That is a very specific example, Brian.
I mean, but it does satisfy the requirements, right? That would be pretty bad, right?
Yeah, I would say yes. Yes, if we had to go back in time and build a hospital, that would suck. That'd be a bad thing that can happen.
I would have set a fire.
Yeah. I would say if it was haunted.
So we're all on the same page. A haunted hospital in the past that's on fire.
Yeah. Right? I think you're right. I think all those are right. I'm going to give you a different scenario. Modern day, you build a hospital. Let's say where you built it, though, not everybody was in agreement that it was the best place to build it.
Was it?
So maybe it was like on the outskirts of town. Like sometimes these happen where there's like rapidly expanding communities. You think that there's going to be one plot of land that's going to be a big neighborhood. Next thing you know, financing falls through, something else happens, and now the hospital's way out in the boonies.
Yeah, and like right on touching the city limits, but outside of it. Also, the land used to be a nudist colony and a cult compound.
Okay. I kind of hard to imagine that scenario.
Yeah, sounds far-fetched. Shut up.
Yeah, just don't dig too deep there, Brian. Just don't dig too deep into the ground. Just saying. I mean, I was doing some research for a book on Texas, not that we're talking about any kind of specific place, and some of the oldest places in America where people lived, right where you live.
Like, really?
You know, yeah. I mean, we could find like 20,000-year-old Native American bones there.
Unrelated, the architect, period, new sentence, the architect that is working with us on designing everything is a real Indian hippie, and he is 100% convinced, and it comes from a place of expertise, that this was at some point Indian holy ground, and he's able to point to things that I'm like, well, this tracks. Wow.
Well, you know, I and just side note here about talk about where you build in the history of places, which relates to what we're, or the story here. I was doing for the next Theo Cray book. You know, he's visiting a professor, and she lives in an area not a little further away from you, but around that area. And I was looking at the old history of that part of Texas and the different groups there and stuff. And it's fascinating when you get into places. You know, we think of America, we don't think of a lot of deep history, even with a lot of what we understand about Native American culture is maybe 800 or 900 years old, because, you know, went through upheaval even right before before the Europeans came. But you know, my pet theory is the Neanderthals made it here.
Ooh,
at some point.
Really?
Yeah, you know, I can't prove it, but why not? But anyhow, no, it's not that. He built a hospital, and some of the locals that were there were not too happy. What if the locals were monkeys?
Oh. How would they? What's funny is I'm asking the question out loud, but I know exactly how monkeys tend to express their dislike of things. And my guess is that method of slinging probably not conducive to a hospital environment. So I think I was actually kind of close with my filth party comment.
They also biting and scratching. They do that too.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, it's usually the biting of soft things like, you know, eyeballs and genitals.
So, monkeys lay siege to hospital built on their land in terrifying footage.
Oh my God, we have footage?
Let's see if I can find it. In Durban, South Africa, they built a R.K. Khan Hospital. Basically, this is where monkeys used to live here. This was sort of, they probably had territory here for quite a while. They said, we'll build a hospital. It's just a bunch of monkeys. We'll just push them aside.
Justin, sidebar?
Yeah.
Look.
Yeah.
I know that we tend to trust each other and we tend to be on the same page.
Sure.
But I am feeling a non-zero chance that the footage we're about to see is just going to be straight up a rip from Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Like, what are, like, do we trust, like give me the true Vegas odds you would give on whether or not this video is going to be what we think it is right now.
See, Brian, this is the difference between you and I, is that Andrew gave that big, this is definitely not an April Fool's Day tease up front.
Right.
And you have been forever on guard, and I immediately forgot about it. I believe that I will trust Andrew. I think that it's 100%. He spends all of his time looking for weird things material. He banks it all, and he is ready to show us something amazing. Despite the fact that nobody else seems to have known about this, that's not odd. Andrew often finds things that nobody else has heard about.
I'm a little hurt.
But I can't tell by which side. By the one of us who believes in your pranksterism or the one that doesn't.
If I was going to pull an April Fool's prank, it would be way better than, hey, monkeys in a hospital. Because that's believable. That's totally, I would have to sort of give you a little bit, build you up, and then put you in a position where you're like, wait a second, we fell for that. Where like, yeah, monkeys, that's a totally believable thing.
We've got
there's
the footage.
No, nothing. I don't win anything if I get you to believe this.
Fair enough.
It's like, hey, I'm drinking orange juice over here, guys. Woo, April Fool. I mean, it's that level.
It's Tang.
Yeah. See.
Oh my God.
This so should this, be footage from a movie. Dude, this looks like Outbreak. It's the Outbreak monkey-sized monkey, and there's one already hanging out, and there's another one, two, three coming in. Oh my gosh!
So they're climbing on
vervet monkeys.
They're climbing on the railing, like curtain railing, in this hospital room. There's probably four or five on screen right now.
And I assume, oh my God, another one just walked in. It's a little sinister because these people are...
Oh, there's one on the floor. Oh, they are going to the floor,
patients
too.
Patients are in beds with the monkeys. Now, I mean, to me, this looks like the best hospital ever. Shows you what I am.
Can you imagine if you are very ill and bedridden and you can't even get out of bed and you're just seeing this? Like if they want to sit down and start eating somebody's face, there's nothing to stop them.
Well, I couldn't stop a nurse from eating my face either, Brian, so...
Fair enough. Also, I'm scared of nurses now.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So this is very sinister because I didn't realize for a second I thought that this was after people had been evacuated, but no, this is an operating hospital with a bunch of patients laid up in rows here in hospital beds, and these monkeys have zero fear.
Yeah, man, they're going all over.
This is something where I mean, did they have to like chase them out or you know, do they like blow an air horn? Like, how do you get how do you stop a monkey invasion?
Well, they would like your help, guys, because that's the problem, is they can chase them out, but the monkeys keep calling in. And, you know, this is a hospital, and, you know, in your place like South Africa, you know, generally you keep your windows open and all that, because I don't think they have, like, a lot of central AC, et cetera, and that's sort of the other problem. You know, that's one of the things we forget about is, as we've moved to places where the weather is sort of different than we're used to, our spaces are much more enclosed sort of in parts of the Western world than they are in, you know, where it's warmer or different environments. So for us, well, you just shut your windows. Well, there you shut your windows and it's not as much of an option.
Yeah, you end up baking alive. So in this case, have they actually attacked or just infested? Is this more of like a fungal infestation or an actual coordinated, we're going to stick it to the man?
Well, again, this was their territory, so they're looking at it like, well, this is new, but we're still going to go in there. The problems that they say the monkeys have been stealing food, and you got a bunch of helpless people, and this is also, you know, they've had, you know, like, Lab, you read the last sentence there. Last month, a monkey hit the headlines after it kidnapped a baby so it had someone to play with.
Oh, my word. I'm against that.
Yeah.
But now imagine the superpowers that baby's going to have. It's going to be like preternaturally, like a half monkey, and it'll learn how to commune with its brothers. Like, I'm just saying, silver lining.
I guess all things being equal, I'd rather like, oh my God, that really is a kid that was lured away by monkeys. I guess all things being equal.
It was my dream when I was a child.
Yeah, I'd rather a kid get stolen by monkeys than wolves. I mean, that's a darker story, if you ask me. Predators.
But ideally, a hospital would be animal-proof.
Well, yes. I'm picking the lesser of multiple evils. of stories I know of children snatched from civilization and raised by non-humans. Mm. Seems like monkeys would be slightly better.
Well, it depends. I mean, you know, there's bite your face off monkeys, then there's, you know, climb on your head and scamper around monkeys. And so It's a good debate. It's a good debate. You know, it's not up for debate. We need your support.
Indeed. Patreon.com/weirdthings. Patreon.com/weirdthings is where you can support this show. Thank you to everybody who supported us in March. April, we are trying to continue to keep this party going, and you can do so at patreon.com/weirdthings. Get a custom RSS feed so you get our After Things program. That is the show we do after Weird Things, where we talk about creativity, making a living for yourself, doing what you love, all the questions that you could possibly have. We answer right there on After Things. Head on over there right now, patreon.com/weirdthings.
All right, guys, I got another story for you. This one's totally not depressing.
All right, I believe you.
Okay.
Headline, why do so many pets keep jumping off dog suicide bridge in Scotland? April Fools, it's depressing. dog suicide bridge.
Okay.
Heard about this?
I saw the headline. Yeah, I saw the headline, did not read the story. I would assume if there's a sneaky reason for it. In fact, maybe Bryce could do some fact-checking on this. I remember hearing that during a concert, Trent Reznor's dog was being walked on the top of a building and went chasing after birds and leaped at birds as they flew away and fell, multiple stories, to the dog's death. And that the people kept it from Trent Reznor until after the concert.
Yes, this appears to be true.
Okay, do we know where it happened? Because I thought I heard it was in Austin, but that sounds more like party talk.
Nine Inch Nails was performing in Columbus, Ohio.
Oof. And so I would guess that this is a similar situation where there are birds or bats or something that love to fly out from that bridge and that dogs tend to want to get them.
And so that is the reason why, because now it's a trend. Like, dogs have continued to jump off this bridge to the point where it's earned the name Suicide Bridge.
I mean, really, you only need twice to call it a trend, right? Like, I wonder how many that is.
Well, yeah, once is a tragedy, twice is a coincidence, three times is a trend. You know, in general, and this is actually a rule in journalism, that, like, you really want at least three independent instances to write a trend piece about something.
So what's your guess?
I think you nailed it. I think because, like, you read the article and it's one of these things where kind of everything you need to know sort of in the headline. Dogs keep jumping off this bridge. Probably think they're chasing animals. Maybe put your dog on a leash when you go near that bridge.
I feel like I did the show a disservice by exactly targeting the most rational
response. Explain things.
Yeah.
One quote says, the dogs catch the scent of mink, pine martens, or some other mammal, and then they will jump up on the wall of the bridge. And because it's tapered, they will topple over.
Ooh.
Ah, the taper.
Though the quote continues that the Overtown grounds are, quote, more spiritual than other parts. Oh, probably because of all the dead dogs.
You know, you're in England, like, everything's going to be spiritual there, you know?
Oh, God, yeah. When we were in Scotland a few years ago, like, literally everything that we were walking above, around, and near in Edinburgh was older than America, right? Like, there's just – everything's old as crap out there in Europe.
Well, and think about the reverse. Like, it's really remarkable to realize what are we at? Like, maybe 180 years of Texas being Texas. Like, you can't find much that's more than 250 years old out these ways. Whereas, like, to us, very old stuff is you're walking around New York and there's a cathedral from 1625 or whatever. Freaking Europe gets old. Like that, that stuff is like, oh yeah, no, this was Christ was alive when this was built.
You know, that's the interesting thing, though, is that we talked about that a little before, though, is we have Native American culture, you know, in North America in particular. There was a huge population and then it went through decline. And then all of a sudden Europeans came and guess what? You know, hey, welcome to genocide and disease. And, you know, we would show up in where there had been villages before, we'd heard about places, and, you know, they'd either wiped each other out because of disease that we brought or other things. There was a decline in population, and then all of a sudden the thing that pushed over the edge is Europeans. And that's the thing, is we go places like, you know, you go through Ohio, though, like, you look at those big, like, the big mounds, like, those things are fascinating. You look around, like, you know, who built these? You know, they're, you know, the remaining ancestors got pushed off to some reservation somewhere else, but there's a lot of places like that. You go into New England and other places where, like, this is a great place to build a town. Once they leave, you know.
Well, I suppose that there's a natural advantages to certain places to build. And guess what? You're probably not the first one to have this idea. Like, oh, look, mm-hmm. there's a natural windbreak here. There's a spring that bubbles up out of the water. This seems like a great place to build a settlement. It's like, yeah, many people thought that before you.
There, one of the reasons that archaeologists love caves is caves are, you know, like, if you're building out of wood and you're building out of materials like that, it doesn't last long. You know, these things go away, and so you don't know what was there before. If you build out of stone, obviously you can find these things. And so in Europe, once we started building out of stone, we're like, oh, look at this history. But it's also like, yeah, there's 30,000 years of human history there before, more, you know, way before going there. There's a, you know, several half a million years of Neanderthal history there. And we'll find every now and we'll find a cave that we realized, man, this cave had been continuously occupied for 100,000 years, either by humans or Neanderthals or back and forth in some places like Denisovians. And that's one of the weird things. Like, yeah, for like 1,000 years, it was just humans lived here. Now we go below there, we found a Neanderthal layer. Below that, we found a human layer. And that's probably true of a lot of places. But, you know, the things we build out of, they decay. And particularly in, you know, what happened, like, you know, Central and South America, you know, unless you built something out of stone in the jungle, you know, we go over and we find this temple in the jungle. Like, guess what? 800 years ago, it wasn't in the jungle. That was all cleared land and farmed and, you know, everything. Yeah. It was just vast tracts of open things. And there was, you know, all sorts of villages and things. And then once they start the decay, then things change. I like, you know, it's very, I like to look, try to look at things through, like, you know, a really old lens, you know.
Then, yeah, it's funny because, I, you know, as human beings, we all love stories. And if you pull back that lens too far, it becomes harder for me to really wrap my mind around the stories of the individual tribes that got there. And it starts to, I don't know, humanity itself looks like a multicellular, for lack of a better word, infection or you know, a colony that is just sort of growing. And it's hard to really focus on the story of any one cell in there, which, of course, you know, in our current lives, we're all a single cell in a giant multicellular organism.
These are two of my favorite objects. These are real, as far as I know. I've shown this before. This is a scraper, and this is a hand axe. This would have been Neanderthal. So this would have been, you know, any 100,000, 300, 400,000 years ago. Okay, and this was a scraper. This was a little bit more contemporary. You know, some dude used this, or woman used this, or Neanderthal, who's a different kind of human. You know, we only have like 2% genes common. You know, this is somebody who lived probably 50,000 years ago, 60,000 years ago. This was a tool they used. You know, I think about this just like, to me, they're real. They're real things that were used by people so far back in history. It's just, I can't even wrap my head around that.
Yeah, the Rational Optimist has a pretty good hunk talking about, you know, the beginning of consciousness and, you know, I might be mixing stuff up here, but I believe he portrays it in terms of, it's no more conscious to create a hand axe for a Neanderthal or one of the precursors to modern Homo sapiens than it is for a bird to be credited with doing engineering as it creates its nest. It just sort of is like, well, that's what we do. We chip this down until it feels right, and great, now I got the thing that cuts the thing. It's really he credits the beginning of kind of humanity as we understand it when it comes to specialization and free trade, where it's like, oh, wait, I can spend half my year learning to make fish hooks and fish, and then the other half my year making, you know, hunting stabby things, or I could just specialize in the one and then trade with the guy who's really good from that other tribe and specialize.
Yeah, I think that's a very good distinction between making the thing that somebody made and how to make it was evolved over time versus things that you sort of think up in the moment or improvise and have utility.
And if I'm remembering correctly, like, there's an astonishing amount of time, thousands and thousands of years of hand axes only being things that you held in your hand before somebody had that spark of innovation that actually thought like, oh, it seems like if you attach it to a stick, more like a tomahawk, then all of a sudden you're getting a lot more done. That is remarkable that it took us so long. Something that in an age where we see innovation daily and hourly, almost, you know, the important innovations and where all of us have more ideas than we have time to implement them. It's so extraordinary to even wrap your mind around, you know, tens of thousands of years of just, you know, using it the same way before you even think about what else can I do with this.
Man, I have moments every day where I go, after the fact, I'm like, oh, I should have done this, but I wasn't clever enough in the moment to think about it.
Right. Know?
And also there's that thing that we all have this inertia, and a good after things comment about how we see the way things are, and it's hard for us to figure out how to, even when we want to do something different, we do something different within the lines.
Yeah.
And often our biggest innovations happen when people accidentally have to step outside of them. But last story here, and this is sort of interesting. There was a National Space Council met, and Vice President Mike Pence made it very clear that the goal is, this administration's goal is the moon in 5 years. Send people to the moon in return, a return mission from the moon in 5 years.
So none of you guys have seen Apollo 11 since I recommended it, right?
No, but I know what happened.
Okay. I watched it for a second time, and it's so remarkable to consider what it looks like starting from scratch. And now my reaction to seeing that headline was, just knock, knock, SpaceX, who wants $300 million? They SpaceX just sold off the shelf a trip to the moon. You're not going to land there, but you get to go to the moon for $150 million. For less than $1 billion, we could just say, yeah, we'll take three of those. And also, please drop this payload where something lands on the moon. That's as astonishing and awesome as the ask is, equally astonishing and awesome is the pedestrian nature of the ask. Like, I think it's great that it doesn't seem like a stretch at all for us to have a permanent presence on the moon if we don't mind paying retail within 5 years.
Here's the problem. You know, there was a headline we just saw, astronauts say we're ready, you know, to go. We'll, you know, NASA's up to the challenge and all that. And it's like, the problem has been this, is that, you know, we've had these mandates before. Different administrations said, we want to go there, we want to go do this. And then NASA comes back with a price tag. It's like, great, give us $30 billion and we can do it. And it's like, ha, $30 billion. I can't get you that much this year. Maybe I can get you $4 billion this year. Then we'll see another four. How long? 5 years? What if we do $5 or $6 billion over 5 years? How does that sound, you know? And then it's like, end of first year, it's like, we made progress, but you know what? It's going to be a little more expensive than we realized, you know? So we need an increase. And the next thing you know, you've spent $10, $15 billion and you have nothing. And you're like, screw it, we have to start over. Part of the problem is because the price is never what we say the price is going to be. That has been and again, when we say NASA, NASA is a continually changing organization. You know, there's NASA today versus NASA 30 years ago, 40 years ago. As an administration or as a bureaucracy, the problem is, you know, prices go up. They make estimates based upon what will get funded. And then things, you look at the cost of the James Webb Space Telescope, one of my favorite examples, but lots of that stuff, it just goes higher and higher. And that's the problem, is we can say, let's go to the moon. And NASA will say, oh, and the number NASA's going to ask is not going to be a number that Congress and the president are not going to say yes and rush out to fund. And even then, it won't be a realistic number.
So you are bearish on this happening.
I think you had, you know, like 2 weeks ago, Jim Bridenstine, who's the administrator for NASA, said, Orion's the new next generation space caps. It's like Orion's going to launch no matter what, like next year. Okay. Even if we have to use a private partner to do it, i.e. put it on top of a SpaceX Falcon Heavy. Well, that behind the scenes looked like that wrinkled some feathers because Congress, there's different states that get their funding, you know, get or make a lot of money from that, from the SLS program, which is the big rocket to send, you know, stuff there. And they don't, you know, you're telling them like, yeah, we make, you know, if you put that on top of a SpaceX rocket, then you start going, why are we spending several billion dollars a year on SLS, which makes certain, you know, senators unhappy. And then what?
Yeah, that's the ultimate takeaway, which is a bummer, which is it's not a matter of technical engineering. It's not even really a matter of price. It's a matter of political will. And your skepticism, I assume, is not point one or point two, but point three, the fact that you are skeptical that if we don't even have the political will to stop flushing money down the toilet with the SLS, again, there is a valid national security reason to continue the SLS thing. But we all acknowledge that it's not a cost-effective strategy to get to space. If we can't even stop our addiction to SLS, then how are we going to handle our addiction to, you know, politically motivating people to spend billions of dollars, billions, plural, you know, to go to the moon?
Well, because I think they're the same problem, you know. Yes, we are flushing our money down the toilet for SLS, but, you know, Boeing and Lockheed and all the other companies that are building it, they own the toilets, right? So we are giving people money. And they are building a thing. Whether or not the thing will be good, whether or not the thing will be cost effective, who knows? Because all the senator knows is they don't want to be run against by somebody who says, under this person's administration, they lost X amount of people for the good folks of Alabama or Florida.
I guess we saw this, and forgive me, I only half remember this, but wasn't this the problem with the Joint Strike Fighter, the JSF, where it's like people had invested so much money in it that nobody wanted to stop, even though it became an increasingly ridiculous and unhelpful piece of military technology?
I mean, I've heard that. I've heard that it's turned out to be a pretty good fighter. I don't know, you know, but that's how I think one of the most tragic examples, my opinion, was the Human Genome Project. You know, this was a project started in the 1990s to map the human genome, to look, try to figure out what all the different genes, you know, controlled or what, you know, figure out where they were, not necessarily what they did. And you had Craig Venter, who was working as a researcher, one of the tens of thousands. You had all these major universities and hospitals and research groups working in this partnership with the National Institute of Health. And the, you know, the process was everybody's going to work on a particular part of the gene, particular part of the DNA in a sequence, and try to figure out like what the sequences are. And then Craig Venter says, you know, there's this method called scattershot, which instead of like doing this bit by bit thing, you just break it up into a bunch of pieces. And then you have a computer, you know, go back and assemble it and identify what these sequences are, right? So it was a much faster way to do it using, you know, supercomputers and newer tech. He went to the National Institute of Health, was like, hey, we should do this. And they're like, no, we're happy because remember, this program was funded for like 8 years or 9 years. And if they did this, it would accelerate the rate at which they did it. And there are arguments to be made for why other reasons why they didn't want to accelerate the program. But the base reality was, if they used this faster technique, the funding for 8 years, they would have only needed, let's say, 4 years of funding. And so they said no. So that's when he went off and started Celera Genomics, a private company that says, we're going to go map the human genome. And they used the scatter shot technique, and we're mapping it. Every time you mapped a sequence, you would go, you know, put it into this public repository of the gene, say, this is the gene bank. This is what we've discovered. This is what we've discovered. People watched as Celera Genomics was putting things in there at a faster rate than everybody else, like faster than everybody else combined. And they're like, oh, damn, they're going to beat us. This private company is going to beat the world's largest medical, you know, scientific research program in genetics ever. So that's when they did this famous, you know, truce between the head of, you know, the NIH and Craig Venter. They're shaking hands and we're crossing the finish line together, because they were going to be embarrassed. They were going to be embarrassed if they didn't partner with them, you know. And that's at your point where a bureaucracy is like, yeah, finding out all this DNA gene stuff is important, and sure, it'll cure people and all that, but we'd rather be funded for the next 8 years instead of 5 years.
You know, because it becomes about job security and about making sure that everybody, like, all right, well, nobody work too hard, because then where's my mortgage going to come from?
Well, that's when you go visit NASA, which a lot of amazing, wonderful people there, they're always in a constant position having to defend their research, because they know there's a finite amount of funding. They've got to explain what they're doing, why it's important. And so when you go do the tour, it's show and tell. This is why we're important. This is what we're doing. And you look at how they have these ready-made displays and all this stuff. They're like, how much time are they spending trying to explain to people why they need to be funded?
What's the apocryphal story that almost certainly is incorrectly attributed to Milton Friedman? Probably never happened, but, you know, here, let's do a mashup thing. Canals being dug. Milton Friedman, economist, shows up. Everyone's using shovels. He says, why aren't you using backhoes and big caterpillars? And the answer is, oh, you don't understand that this is not about digging the trench. It's about jobs. And he goes, oh, in that case, why aren't you using spoons? Then you'd have even more jobs.
Yeah, and that's the point. Is your point is trying to create jobs. And then I heard a great one about we're running a deficit's not bad. You know, it's like, then why have taxes?
that deficit. Yeah.
Don't tax. Just keep running a deficit. You know, I'm like, and that's the thing. And we're all, we want to look for ways to help. You know, how do you help? How do we help? How do we do this? And I think that, you know, I would love to see NASA with triple the budget that it has. And, you know, if it were 10-20% more efficient, you know, triple the budget would be great. I would love that. You know, and that
so you are bearish. You would take the under on this.
In order for this to happen, I mean, the answer is that there is a price at which this can be done, that Congress can agree on, the president can agree on, and all of this. In this current climate, I do not think. I don't want to get too political here, but I believe there is an attitude of we would rather collectively take a loss than let the president take a win if he lands on the moon during his administration.
If I'm hearing you correctly, it's a matter of the current administration not having the political clout or capital to push this, combined with a general tepid interest from it's the country doesn't want it so bad that we'll let whoever's in charge, as long as we get it. That's great. And meanwhile, the administration doesn't have the current capital to push it as a visionary direction.
I mean, that's what a way to phrase it. I mean, I think, you know, I think that, I think at the current administration, you know, I think there is. I'm just going to say this. Like, last week we had a lot of people happy that it turned out, according to what we know about the FBI report, that the president was not a Russian spy. People were unhappy to find out that he was not, as far as we could find that. And so I'm like, wait a second. that's good. That's good news, And so that's the climate we're in. We're like, well, find out what else. Let's know what else is there, because like, it doesn't mean like other stuff didn't happen, But I was just like,
That's the case, do you feel like making this a pet project was if you're somebody who wants us to get off this planet, does making this a pet project of this administration actually serve a negative? Yes. Is part of you saying like, please don't make this one of the things you want, because
let's go into weird things gets political. When Mike Pence says, hey, we want to go to the moon within 5 years, that means, assuming that Trump gets reelected, we want to go to the moon in return while he's president. That's the goal. That right. is the goal. That 5-year time frame, people are like, I don't think so, And that's why, because it is a political goal. Sure, certainly that's what the administration wants to be able to say. I'm like, great, sounds awesome. But other people are like, what? So he can just score a political win? It's like, maybe, but we go to the moon,
And also politically, it'd be a lame duck, the end of his lame duck term anyway. So I don't know exactly. I mean, the horse would literally be out of the barn and apparently have flown to moon if it does wind up happening like that. I don't know. I mean, I do think that, look, there are still a lot of very raw feelings about NASA that are complicated even further by our current political system. The question to me would be looking at where the SLS, the key defenders are in the Senate, and figuring out if you have a map that somebody like Mitch McConnell, who, has been fairly good about marshaling votes, would be able to push something through to have a big space win.
Yeah. I like it to happen. The private enterprise, and not just SpaceX, Blue Origin. I mean, they haven't launched their heavy hardware yet, but, amazing things can happen, but it's just finding the political will. So,
yeah, I'm sure that might be more of an upset, considering the ownership lines between Blue Origin and the raw feelings between this administration and him.
Well, there's that, but anyhow, let's do a picks.
Hey man, I saw some movies. I saw Apollo 11 a second time. I went and saw the Dumbo, but my pick is Us. I went and saw Us. It's a good movie. You should watch Us, assuming you don't mind being scared and seeing really good direction to designed to make you scared.
Yeah, I'm going to double down on it and make that my pick as well. I thought it was far more scary than Get Out. It was far more of a straight ahead horror movie than Get Out was. But I think it still gave me what I now, having seen two of his movies, can now expect from Jordan Peele, which is well-crafted, well-acted, good character horror, but also like, and there's certainly a large conversation to be had about both those movies and Get Out. I think it soured a lot of people the further that the premise was explained. I really liked it. This is another movie where I think Jordan Peele is committed to explaining why things happen. There is certainly some gobbledygooky magic stuff in there, but toward the premise, you're not just going to get, oh, they're just crazy, or oh, they're just nuts. There's elements of that in there, but I like the fact that he I'm always a big lore nerd. I like it when the lore is explained, and he does a very good job of that in this movie.
So, separate from Us, has anybody happened to tune in on that new Netflix original animated series, Trailer Park Boys?
No, I got a push notification for that. I didn't see any of the Trailer Park Boys stuff. Did you watch the animated?
I watched, I think two or three seasons, and it filled It was like methadone to my affection for Always Sunny in Philadelphia, you know? Mm-hmm. But I never finished it, but I didn't need to finish it to instantly get where they were going with the animated series, where they do spend the whole first episode, this is not a spoiler because it happens in the first 5 seconds, but the first words they say in animated form, everybody is in a jail cell together, and the first words out of their mouth is, "Holy cow, we ate so many mushrooms that we all think we're cartoons." And then we watch them experiment with cartoon logic. And then like the second episode, they're like, "Oh man, it's been a week and we're still crazy high." And then by the end of the second episode, one of the characters is like, "I don't know, maybe this is just how it is from now on. Whatever, it's fine. I mean, I'm still me, I guess." And then that's the last mention about them being cartoons. And from there on out, you get into increasingly madcap cartoon territory. Oh, I'm really enjoying it.
Had they even announced it? Because it
was a total surprise to me.
Yeah, yeah. It was a real sort of shocker to me. I have a pick. I am late to the train, but I am on it, and I am on it until the end of it. I have gone through the first season over the past week of Lost.
Yeah!
The classic ABC supernatural drama thriller thing. My feeling at the end of season one was a little bit of a bummer. I'd mentioned before that I was really interested in The OA on Netflix, which is a similar sort of puzzle box thing. And what I liked about The OA is it's very short and it's very dense. So you get a lot of weird stuff, but you do get a lot of answers. And when I was done with the first season of Lost, I was like, oh, I'm waiting for some sort of payoff. I want payoff. You expect a payoff at the end of the end of you know, a big budget show like this. But now I've started season two, and season two is where a lot of stuff starts picking up steam. And so I don't know. I'm into it. I actually felt like I over binged it the other day, just because I watched a shameful amount in one day.
You know, it's funny you say that, because to my knowledge, that was in DVD world the like viral binge show. Like in my mind, that was the show that kind of like invented the idea where you would come back to your friends and for the first time say like, "Oh my God, you want to know what show I just like binged over the weekend? Was the DVD for Lost." Like DVRs were around, on demand existed, but it wasn't ubiquitous.
Right.
And it was kind of annoying. I think it was also like a pay thing. Like you had to pay the extra to rent a DVR. If you were rich, you had a TiVo. TiVo had been around for a while. Mm-hmm. But that DVD, I remember just like having my friends like and myself like just, you sit around and then you would talk about how many episodes you watched in like one day. And that was the first time I ever remember having those conversations. And now killed, that was the meteor that killed the dinosaur the weekly enjoyment thing.
And I think if you rewrote Lost for today, if you did season one of Lost again, it would be so much shorter. It would be much more compact.
By the way, spoiler alert, that's probably the thing. There's a lot about Lost that projects well into what has happened on television. Then there's the fact that episode count, and by the end of the final seasons are around like 12, 13, 14 episodes, but those first three seasons, especially when trying to carry that flashback formula. Wow, there's a lot of episodes, man.
Yeah.
As far as the binge thing, yeah. I think the only other thing I could think of from around that time was Battlestar Galactica. That was one that a lot of people missed the beginning of, but then everybody got, everybody heard this is the best sci-fi in decades, and then everybody just watched. And I'll go to the mat with anyone who could point to, outside of The Expanse, a first season as good as Battlestar's first season.
Yeah. So that's kind of the only thing I'm wrestling with, is seeing the formula pretty clearly. But I've heard a lot of stuff about season two. I'm sure there's a whole rest of that season left for me. But the beginning of it, the first few episodes, I actually feel good because at least it's continuing to expand the world and show a lot of new weird things.
You are just at the beginning of, I mean, talk about lore. You were just at the beginning of kind of the ratcheting up there. There's plenty of weird bottle episodes and plenty of flashbacks that you might watch and say, oh, geez, really? Another one of these? Do we really need to know that, you know, Sawyer's a con artist with a heart of gold? Maybe if we watch him do one more scam where he feels conflicted, then we'll really know.
Yeah.
When you get there, note and let me know about when the major sci-fi prop that currently resides at Wizard Academy shows up.
Okay.
Do you know about this?
Maybe, but I'll I'm getting into Lost, and so that's kind of a neat thing. So that's on Hulu. Hulu's got that.
Nice. Andrew?
You know, one of the things they did too, I was just thinking about Sci-Fi Channel, because with Battlestar Galactica, like to get you into that was, remember how they kept replaying all like the earlier seasons, and I think they even aired them on like NBC or something like that, you know, because like what did we do before we could just, you know, I'm just going to go online and watch them all, you know. Well, I mean, a lot of people did that with the you know, illegal copies or the torrents or whatever. But, you know, it's interesting, like, you know, how the evolution of binging. Hey, do you know what these are?
Did somebody get on the AirPod train? Man, I mean, everybody. Hey, where have you
up?
Been?
Guys. No. You're thinking about those.
You got
these
two.
These guys. Andrew's holding up AirPods. So identical cases.
Your pick is not AirPods, but a second pair of AirPods.
AirPods 2. I've been using AirPods forever, Brian. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I've been on that train. I'm the conductor on that train, Brian. I've been a big fan. And so when they said AirPods 2, I'm at the point where like I can notice my battery life has gone down because I use them so much. I got AirPods Dose here.
Uh-huh.
And you're like, the AirPods, they look exactly like AirPods, except actually I had my name and all that put on there, which I don't know if you can see.
He's got his Twitter,
but, anyhow,
at Andrew Mann.
Hey, you know what's cool about these? These AirPods too?
Yeah.
They feel exactly the same.
Yeah.
But you can just go, hey, Siri, and she's in my head. It's no touching, no whatever, hands-free Siri.
It's actually super weird, because normally when you do it on the phone, you kind of, I always wait for the little beep, and with this, it's better for you not to wait. It's better for you to just talk and say the thing, and that's super super duper weird because that's just not how I'm used to.
So you have the twos too?
Yes, yeah, I snuck off to the domain the day that they arrived in stores.
I will say, and I have become increasingly more frustrated with the Apple company and their products. I think it is the fact that they canceled that AirPower charging mat, and we saw something that was kind of verboten in a previous incarnation of Apple, like straight out vaporware, a thing that they made a big deal about and then just never happened. Yeah. Is a troubling sign.
For those that know, 2 years ago, Apple announced that they were going to come out with a charging mat, a little charging pad that would charge your phone and your Apple Watch and your AirPods all in one thing, you know, charge them all.
And that they wouldn't have, like, because with charging mats, you have to kind of be very particular and get them in the right spot, where their idea was that this would be a little...
This would be more expansive. It wouldn't matter. Maybe it could jostle a little bit. Maybe your phone would ring. There's been a few times where I wirelessly charge on the little pad next to my bed, but every once in a while, either I don't put it down right, either I get a call and it vibrates it off the little button that it needs to be on, and I wake up with a phone that has zero charge on it, right? So that's troubling. All that is to say that the only thing recently that I've gotten and I felt, oh my God, this is the Apple feeling of they weren't the first, but they cracked the code, was AirPods.
Yep.
They're just always, they always work. You can pull them out of your ears and they pause. That's the biggest thing. The biggest thing is just not having to hit a button to pause your podcast or your audiobook. You just pull it out of your ears and they pause and then they restart as soon as you put them back there. But even like little utilities, like Brian and I were actually had a call with Bryce, and it was actually a fairly like serious call with Bryce. And it was easy enough that I could just pull out one, put it in my ear, pull out one, pull it in Brian's ear. And I wasn't worried about about it being a problem or disconnecting, or Brian and I could be as far away from each other at the bar as we wanted to be. And like it was just, it's the first time that Bluetooth has always been such a frustrating technology in that it's always so close, but yet always so far, that AirPods are very much worth it if you are in the iOS ecosystem.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in the two, you know, it's improves upon, I didn't get the wireless charging on it, 'cause like I've been reading articles about, you know, behind the scenes, like, yeah, this charging pad may never happen. So I'm like, I'll just use the cable. I'm like, I have a fast charge stand that I use for my phone, but I love it. Like AirPods, like everybody, you know, it was a lot like kind of the original iPhone. You're like, no, really, get this phone. Like, I don't know. And then you get like, oh my God, now it's everything. And then in a world with Google and all those other devices, it's a different question. But when the iPhone was the only thing, it's, you know, was like, well, that's your choice. With AirPods, like if you're on an iPhone, I tell my friends, just get the AirPods. Like, yeah, like I'm like, it's just a game changer. You know, the charging in the case is one thing. The setup is great. I went with a friend to the Apple store, and he walks out with his box, and I'm like, oh, you want to set those up? He's like, oh, I'll wait till I get home to set them up. I'm like, no, just open it. Opens up the box, takes out the case, like just open the top of the lid, and the phone's like, hey, do you want to connect? He's like, that's it. I'm like, yeah, that's it. So.
Yeah,
they're
pretty cool. I got them because I had the Beats X like Justin did, and they had the in-ear sort of rubber, you know, gasket sort of thing, and I don't really like that very much, but I really like the normal ear pod headphones, and so my ideal thing would be something like the Beats X where it's a thread, but then it has the ear bud sort of pod design at the end. But these stay in my ear, which, you know, for a lot of people it doesn't. I don't exercise very much, so I don't worry too much about them falling out. But they feel invisible. I wear them around the house because it's not like this big deal of like I gotta put them in, and I can't eat with the Beats X because you hear the chewing and stuff. And so these are pretty nice everyday things.
You know, once you get used to them, and the fact that now it's hands-free Siri, and that you get a taste, you're starting like AirPods already, you get a taste of the future, because now, like, yeah, I leave them in. It's funny, I'll have a conversation with my girlfriend, and both of ours are off, but we're talking to each other with our AirPods in because we just leave them in, because when we sit down to work, that's how we, you know, we hear our computer, or that's how we listen to our podcasts or whatever. And it is, I think that we're going to see the next big tech thing is going to probably be more wearable earpieces. Like, I think if Amazon wanted to make big inroads, is, you know, you could take, you know, Echo and put Echo in part in a case like this that could be, have, you know, the Wi-Fi and then the Bluetooth thing here, and have always with you if you have Wi-Fi, Echo instead of the other name. That would be amazing, because that's still my favorite voice assistant.
Yeah. Because
all my audiobooks there. I think that's where the push is going to be. I think the next thing is people can start to say, like, yeah, these things are really useful. What if you put a lot of what you do inside of your phone inside it? Because you can have this. If you have the case with you and you have the Bluetooth, which now the next generation Bluetooth goes really far, you have so much of what you can do with computing right there.
Sure.
So
we get closer and closer to her.
Yes. And then she leaves us.
Yeah.
Spoiler. Because she's talking to Alan Watts. I can never wrap my head around that. Anyhow, it's been weird.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.